Okay, right. Now, today is a special day to recognise all of the efforts and work of SNAs right across the country. And we got a lot of notifications of this, and I think we can all agree and join in celebrating the great work our SNAs do. I got a note from one. Bernie says, "Hi, my name is Bernie McFeely and I'm an SNA in St. Bernadette Special School here in Letterkenny, and I'd like a request for all of my colleagues here in the school and to each and every SNA countrywide, but especially Donegal, of course, to say happy SNA Appreciation Day. Could you please play Tina Turner, Simply the Best, for them all?" We'll get that played, I'm sure, throughout the course of the morning. But if you want to celebrate an SNA in your life or someone you had engagements with, it is SNA Appreciation Day today. So if you have an appreciation for the work of special needs assistants or one in particular or whatever, why not use the next couple of hours to share the love? So as I say, today is SNA Appreciation Day. Text in your appreciation for SNAs if you wish to 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, and well done to all. Right, on to some issues now. I've written to several councillors about the amount of street lighting in Convoy which is out. I was shocked to get a letter this morning to tell me there's no contract to fix these as we are between contracts. This is supposed to be what we're paying our household charge for. Well, it might feel like that's why you're paying your household charge. It's not actually for that. But I take your point. Wow, in between contracts. How in between are we? That's an interesting one. Haven't heard that before. Hi, Greg. I just read that yesterday a court, a drug dealer who was caught by undercover guardie on 6 occasions, either in the act of selling or in possession of drugs. The man refused to cooperate with the probation service. He didn't show up for the probation officer's meetings. He was given community service and a suspended sentence. Meanwhile, Enoch Burke has been jailed on numerous occasions for breaking a court order which denies him his constitutional right to peaceful protest, not to mention the EU Charter of Fundamental Rights to freedom of religious belief and rights to conscientious objection. A drug dealer is treated better by a justice system than a peaceful protester. Our justice system is broken. Our justice system is a joke. And there's lots of examples of where the law seems contradictory in that it's It can be very powerful to one group of individuals and lack teeth to another. Greg, most people are awake now. All these TDs, no matter what party they are part of, they're all in it together, sharing big checks, and they do not care about the people on the ground working to pay their bills and nothing left after those bills are paid. I was just listening to your listener Jackie earlier on in the show about her mortgage and her shared ownership issue. I can't understand why anyone in the legal profession in Donegal couldn't help her. Says a lot about our legal profession. Now, it doesn't really say a lot about the entirety of the legal profession. She's engaged with a couple of people in the legal profession and they weren't able to offer her assistance. But I'm sure there's someone out there that might be able to dig a little deeper into that for her. It's just a case of getting her in contact with that person. Why are landlords suddenly raising rents to extortionate prices, asks another listener. Too much for their original tenant of many years to pay, so the tenants have to move out. Then another family moves in. And yes, I've witnessed this at least 4 times happening to my neighbours who are living beside me here in Letterkenny. What's going on? Well, if you look at what is going on, this is not a defence, this is sort of an observation of mine. You can agree or disagree, of course. But if you, there's two sets of figures that come out as it relates to Donegal rents. There is new rents and then there is tenant in situ rents, right? And there's a big gap, 400, 500, 600 euro between those. And you've got a landlord looking at their property and they've got tenants in there. And they probably don't have any personal relationship with them or not. But if they can get them out and get new tenants in, they're up to the tune of 400, 500, 600 quid a month. I presume that's what the motivation is. What protections are there for tenants and what have you, I don't know. And some might say it's the landlord's private property. They're entitled to do that. But that's, of course, what's happening. Hi, Greg. It's an absolute disgrace. The money the government is wasting and the poor people in Donegal fighting for money to fix their homes that are falling down around the ears. Hi, Greg. It's not about time, or is it not about time people started being truthful and say how totally useless the government running this country is? Never mind the total shambolic bike shed and security hut. The Children's Hospital really shows how this government are totally incapable of running a country. Listening to Thomas Pringle, it really shows What a total comical, farcical government we have. Immigration, health, education, policing, water, infrastructure, housing, etc. are all seriously on the brink of collapse. Bad, bad times ahead. But I mean, I'm sure like Sophina Fall, for example, who enjoy incredible support, and their candidates will do very well in this county, I'm sure, and they probably will find themselves back in government again. They would argue that, you know, are they to blame for the children's hospital? They were in a confidence and supply arrangement with Fine Gael. Is that really in government? Of course, now they are in coalition. But, you know, there's many sides to the story. That's one view from one listener. But I'm sure Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael supporters might say that they have been very good for this country. And there's always going to be problems here or there. Tell Jackie that the shared ownership about the shared ownership to contact MABS services in Letterkenny. Jackie did engage with them previously when she had a short stint of financial issues. I'm not sure if she engaged with them specifically about this shared ownership situation, but she's in quite a quandary. She's paid 23,000 deposit, 108 euro in payments. So 108,000 euro in payments. So that's a big chunk of cash. The house was originally worth 158,000 euro. I think she was of the view that she was purchasing the home. Now, in the documentation I've seen, that is an option. I'm not sure if it's default, but that was an option anyway. So she wants to find out what's the future. You know, what does she leave to her children, or how could she realise the asset if she wanted some money? And as it turns out, the council have no ownership of the property at all. It's owned by two other private individuals. And you can see the situation she's in. We're trying to find out what's going on. And anyone else out there with any information, let us know. The lady who was evicted should take a screen grab of the ad on Daft and make a formal complaint to the RTB with a screenshot of that ad. The RTB would then contact the owner of the property, and if they found to be at fault, the lady might get some financial compensation. Perhaps, but like, I don't know the ins and outs of the situation, but if I were the landlord and I wanted to sort of, you know, do the do, I could say, well, you know, my son was coming back from England to live in the house, and had to sort of vacate it so that he could move in. But then he got a job offer at the last minute and the tenants had already moved out, and he was no longer coming back. And he'll write a letter to prove that, if that's need be. So I've put it back on the market again at the going market rate. Like, really, if someone said that, would the RTB be able to dig a little bit deeper in that and to say, well, you're not being 100% truthful here or not? I don't know. But it just looks to me like people are clever and would perhaps give themselves a little bit of wiggle room in that regard. If you have any insight into that, please, again, text in or call in. And just before the break, Clodagh McGrath's in Ballybuffet. She is our granddaughter and is 11 today. Clodagh is at school, maybe. If she is, you can play this back to her on the podcast. Happy birthday to you, Clodagh. This comes in from your loving granny and granddad in Ballybuffet and nanny in Burt.
The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
We are joined by our historian friend, Dr. Joe Kelly. We're going to talk history, or is it his story? It's a bit of both, isn't it? Because it's the story of Harry Percival Swan. Good morning, Joe. How are you keeping? Good morning to you.
Mighty and why good, Greg, is the Loch Dash Chicta. I must apologise in advance. I'm a little hoarse this morning.
You're a pony. You're just a little horse.
A little pony, yeah. That's what the
We're all the same. Me and Caroline are the same. It's just this sort of a upper respiratory thing that we have anyway. Joe, how are you keeping? How's the new term going for you?
It's just wonderful, yeah. It's great to be back into the rhythm of life and structure a little bit. It's a lovely thing to, you know, to get back into the rhythm. Summer can be too long, I think. I would far rather see it be broken up and that students would get longer holidays throughout the year as opposed to a big, long summer holiday. But look, that's my looking at it, you know.
There you go. All right. Interesting. We could have a whole interview on that, but we're not going to do it because this is a feature. Now, yes, our focus is on the Inishowen Peninsula. And one of Buncrana's most famous sons is Harry Percival Swan. Introduce us to Mr. Swan.
Ah, yeah, look, he's one of these characters that I would have loved to have met him. Obviously, he was dead before my time, but he must have been a wonderful, wonderful individual. I mean, he was an antiquarian, he was an author, he was a businessman, he was a man of deep religious faith as well. He was a Presbyterian and taught in Sunday school for almost 40, 50 years. He was very sincere, you know, genuine man that was really earthed in Donegal, its folklore, its story, its business. So he had a lot of things happening, and that all grew out of Bun Crana. So it's a reflection a little bit on the richness and the beauty that is Bun Crana as well. And I mean, he lived out of Bun Crana all his life, and he understood what his roots were and the people around him. So in that way, he was a wonderful, wonderful man, born in 1879 and he died in 1970.
Well, he had a long life. But let's take us right back to the beginning. What do we know about Harry Percival Swan's formative years, his youth?
Yeah, well, there was eight in the family. His mum was from Belfast. She was cook, her maiden name. And the father, he was a businessman himself and owned the Swan Mill Company that is still there. It's a lovely building still there in Bun Crana. If you're driving into Bun Crana, you'll still see it. And it's an architectural listed building, as far as I know. But that was his home, so to speak. That was his dad's business and so forth. And his mum died when he was about 17. And so there was eight in the family and he was the oldest. And what she did, which I thought was a lovely thing, she left a little booklet for every one of her children, knowing that she was going to die. And she wrote an eulogy for each of them. And if you let me indulge with the one she wrote for Harry himself. "Harry, my dear, my firstborn son, your father's help, your mother's joy. And loving I can trust my son to do the work I would have done. The others will learn much from you and do the things they see you do. And manners, character and talk, they after you will largely walk. And you can do a deal to mould them into copper or gold. In business, office, work and such, your father loves and trusts you much. And loving I can trust my son to do the homework I would have done."
Oh, wow. So, that's actually really very touching.
It is very touching. And yeah. Look, we know children and people that, you know, that poem would mean something terribly, you know, emotionally. But
that's worthy of any book. She was a wordsmith herself. So she obviously was aware that she was to pass, and she had eight children, and Harry was the eldest at 17.
And I think that maybe was very formative for him, because he realised then, being the oldest, that he had to grow into the fine man that he became and to be exemplary in everything. And he was. He lived an exemplary life.
Can I say one thing, though, just finally about his mother's words? She actually encouraged him in that role, but not in a way that would be to put him under pressure. Guiding words of encouragement, but not, you know, like the song Patches, if you remember that old song. You know what I mean? What an amazing gift she left for him there.
Yeah, it was. And look, as I said to you, he kind of seemed to have grown into it, and he took on that responsibility with a great understanding. And look, he grew into the business, and he took over the business then after his father, and he became a sales representative. And what was wonderful about that was it allowed him to travel Donegal. So he got to know, like, the Gaeltacht areas where I'm from, and Gador and Clonmacnoise, you know, that whole area. So he travelled the whole country, because there were millers. They were selling grain. There were merchants. And so that allowed him to interact with other, it wasn't so much other cultures, but other stories and folklore and other language and so forth.
Did he leave school early to pursue that career with the...
No. He got a good education.
Right.
What was called Londonderry there, the Londonderry Academy. He was educated there, Foyle College. And he excelled in his studies, but obviously he went back home then to run the business.
And you believe his travels, he culturally grew through those travels then, sort of helped form a part of him as well?
Absolutely, absolutely. Apart from the basic understanding of who he was, and I said he was a Presbyterian, but his father would have signed the 1912, the Ulster Covenant. So, you know, wouldn't have wanted independence. Yet he didn't. Harry didn't sign it. And Harry later became the first peace commissioner in the county of Donegal, in the new fledging state. Unbelievable change from one side to the other, growing through a changing Ireland. And then subsequently he wrote a song for the new Irish Republic. There was no national anthem at the time. In 1920 he composed, for a short while it was a national anthem, a national song for the Irish Free State. And Neil McGillivray, who was from Creasla, a great Irish scholar from Creasla, translated into Irish for him. So it just shows you how... wide his roots, so to speak, spread.
Before we move on and learn a bit more about him, just on the mill side of things, if that's okay, because he took over the running that from his father. You mentioned it was a grain mill. Was that its sole purpose? And how long was it a working building?
Yeah, well, it was a a mill itself as a working building, yeah, and continued as a mill. But in, your point is, in 1920s, electricity was understood or invented. And Sean Beattie, a wonderful historian, in one of his articles talked about, I think he saw, Harry saw, I think it was in Fawn, the train master in Fawn had done something to put a light on the station outside the gangway. Mm. And he says, well, this is amazing. So he came back to Buncrana with that idea and said, look, maybe can I produce electricity? Can I? So he actually turned the mill, the river mill, into a hydroelectric.
Oh,
and
wow.
He was Donegal. Buncrana became the first town in Donegal to have electricity, and it was powered by Harry wasn't so slow in business, if that makes sense. For £156 per annum, Buncrana was lit. And what was wonderful as well, like, he, I would say he was a real character. One of his churchmen lived down at the strand of Buncrana, which was in view of all the other houses of Buncrana, and he gave him free electricity on one condition, that he had to leave the light on all night. It was a form of advertisement for others to see, God, we must get this, you know. So, like, there, you know, he must have had a great sense of humour and a great understanding.
So did he transition from milling grain, being a grain mill in total, to producing electricity? Like, was that the end of the milling of the Swan family?
No. The mill building itself was built about 1868, and then it was extended and enlarged in the 1890s. But it ran electricity from 1905 to 1954. But the mill itself continued, I think, into the 1980s.
Wow.
It was taken over by a company called Rank Ireland Limited, and it was there until 1980s. And I think then there was a fire or something. It's a beautiful building. It would be lovely to be seen restored or used in some way. But we talk about his ingenuity. He was also, like, member, he was a golf course captain. He was involved with the cinema complex that was in Londonderry, it was called at the time, and he was the chairman of that. He was the harbour master for 18 years. I mean, he had his fingers in many, many things, and he realised the tourist and cultural potential of Donegal. That was very, very important to him. And he travelled a lot. He travelled all over the world. And he wrote a number of books about that. There was one, A Voyage Around Africa. And he would come back then and give lectures or talks in Buncrana. And he claimed that there wasn't a major sea in the world that he hadn't travelled to.
Wow.
And I remember once chatting to former mayor of Donegal, Nicholas Cross, and the county councillor there in Buncrana, and he told me that he remembered him as a young fella and going to his house. And he was asked once, you know, after all your tours, where is the most beautiful place you've seen in the world? And his answer was, my own front door.
Yes, it is. I can see where he's coming
from.
Yeah.
Funnily enough, there about 5 or 6 weeks ago, I had the privilege to go and visit his front door. It's the house now of Brian Flanagan. He owns that house. That's Percival. And he gave me a tour of the house and showed me all the artifacts that are still there.
Oh, wow.
Some wonderful, beautiful things. So thanks to Brian and Bernard.
Was he a good author?
Yes, he was, absolutely. He was. Look, it wasn't high academic stuff, but it was very interesting, you know, plethora of different things. I mean, the highlights, different books I'm just going to name. He wrote about 10 books. You know, The Book of Any Show, 1938, Twixt Foil and Swilly, 1948, Romantic Donegal and Songs, Poetry and Ballads, 1952. He wrote lots and lots of different books. There was one lovely book he wrote, and it wrote Highlights of Ireland's Story. So it was folklore, wisdom, various different aspects of Irish culture, heritage. But he realised that there was a tourist potential in exploring or delivering these books to people, to realise that Donegal had a rich, rich heritage. And he claimed in one of his books that Donegal was the finest holiday county in Ireland. Donegal is the finest county in Ireland in which to spend a holiday. It is pleasantly primitive and yet very comfortable.
That's, so it's fair enough. I like that. We've had royal visits all around the country, and much has been made of that and what have you. I think King Charles, then Prince Charles, would be the last royal to visit the county. I think he's visited Donegal Town there 6 or 7 years ago. But he wouldn't be the first king or future king to have visited Donegal. Is that correct?
Like, again, we're talking about Bunkrana. Bunkrana is one of these gems of Donegal, and I genuinely mean that. There's a lot of history and a lot of culture there, and it's kind of a little beautiful little town unto itself.
But it's the biggest seaside town in the county.
Yeah, but it's where it's geographically positioned as well. And maybe, look, it's not the politics of it, but the border has maybe damaged it to some degree, in the sense that before the border, it was more free-flowing, you know, movement of people across, and culturally very much, you know, having the old and the new and very diverse and all that there. And there was a great richness there, and it still is there. If you go and walk down the street, it's a wonderful, wonderful town. And surprised, I was asking my students, you know, how many of them been to Bunkrana? And I was surprised with how many hadn't been. And I said, you know, you want to get into the car with your mum and dad and go down there for a day. And there's lovely cafes and lovely walks. Swan Park, which Harry himself donated to the people of Bunkrana.
Yeah, and the people of Bunkrana are unique, and they've got a certain, you know, very individual thinking, free thinking, strong way about them. It's you can see it, if you know what I mean. But listen, I want to talk about King Edward's visit and much more, and learn a little bit more about Harry Percival Swan. But I'm going to let you get a glass of water. I'm going to get a glass of water, and we'll play these ads, and then we'll be right back with Dr. Joe. We're talking history, and it's about one of Bunkrana's most famous sons, Harry Percival Swan. He was a notable businessman, antiquarian, and author. And also, he may or may not have had a role in the visit of King Edward to Bunkrana in 1903. Our historian, Dr. Joe Kelly, is going to fill in the blanks.
Well, yeah, you're correct. He was a harbour master, involved with the harbour master. He wasn't the harbour master, but chairman of the harbour in Bunkrana. And again, Bunkrana was geographically very important from a sailing point of view and from a boating point of view. And so, believe it or not, three of the royalty, or the king and queen, so two kings and one queen, have come to Bunkrana. I mean, that's an unbelievable fate, considering the empire of the time and considering how big it was, that Bunkrana would have been seen to have been important enough to visit. And so King Edward the VII and his wife, Queen Elizabeth, or Queen Alexandria, sorry, came to Bunkrana. What they did was, it was the first time he came officially as king to Ireland. And he started a tour starting in Dublin, and he went round the whole up to Belfast, round into Donegal, down into Connemara, down into Cork and back round again. But he had his yacht with him, and his yacht sailed round. So when he was in Derry, he took the train, imagine, the train into Bunkrana on the 28th of July 1903. Both the king and his wife Alexandria arrived there about 5 p.m. And they reckon there was about 10,000 people there present, apart from military and RIC and all the rest. And 10 yachtsmen, oarsmen, were there to take him out. And believe it or not, now I'm sure this will stir the great Republican tradition of Bunkrana in the modern day, that there were 400 children were there to sing "God Save the King" as he was leaving on the quayside. But what he did actually was... obviously, Harry would have been involved with that there. And again, when I was in visiting Harry's former house, now belonging to Brian Fanning, and he showed me some of the artefacts from that time and a lovely picture sketch from that time. Harry himself used to draw sketches. So he showed me some of the things that he had. But one of the things that the king did was he issued a medal for that tour to Ireland. And I would imagine there are people today in Bunkrana that have the King Edward the VII medal commemorating his visit to Ireland. And in particular,
let us know if it's in your possession. Just in relation to his extensive travel you talk of, where did he make his money from? Was it from the mill? Was it from the electricity? Because neither sound like they potentially sort of afford you the lifestyle where you can spend weeks or months travelling around the world. So how did he fund that?
Well, I would imagine the mill was profitable. Okay. You've got to understand it, that at that time, milling was terribly important. I mean, there wasn't a wallet of food varieties available, and milling and making your own bread and your own flour, that was terribly important. And so he went down into the northwest of Donegal. So that's how far his reach was. And also the electricity, obviously that increased over time. So there was income from that as well. But he also was involved in other businesses in Derry City. He had other holdings and other businesses. So he had a variety of streams of income. But you've got to remember, back in those days, it wouldn't have been necessarily as expensive as we would might think to travel on some of these ships and boats in relative terms. He would have shipped and sailed to a lot of these places and taken notes and written books. And what's very unique about one of the books he wrote about the voyage around Africa was it wasn't so much it was a tourist book. It was also telling the potential of the businesses in each of those places. So he came with a business mind to these cultures, which I thought was interesting. But if you don't mind me to go back to King Edward.
Oh, yes, of course. Yep.
Worthwhile saying as well that Queen Victoria also came to Buncrana. And also later on, King George V in 1911 came to Buncrana. So that's three kings or royalties, monarchs of the British Empire, so to speak, came to Buncrana.
But why particularly Buncrana?
Again, I think it's just it was rich culturally. It's just one of these lovely places. Okay.
No, that sounds like I didn't mean like why would you go to Buncrana? Just to have three visits from royalty in short stint. It's just
It must have been seen as a gem, a cultural gem. Yeah. I honestly don't know, but it's quite interesting that that they chose to go to Buncrana. And was it because it was in the hinterland? You see, the border wasn't there, and it maybe epitomised something wonderful about Donegal, and it still does. So, I mean, Buncrana, hats off.
Why not? Yeah.
And in that sense.
So you talked about him being an antiquarian, and obviously through his travels or even locally, like what was his interest? You know, what did he gather? Was it Irish stuff, local stuff? Did he pick up stuff in his international travels? Like, what was his catalogue like?
Well, like, he was a member of the Donegal Historical Society and the Antiquarian Society of Ireland. He was president of the Donegal Society, so he was really into the history, culture, heritage. And he realised probably when he was travelling around selling the mill and the company, he saw a lot of artefacts and saw a lot of objects. And he obviously had some money to buy stuff as well. And so he gathered, like myself, I hoard things historically. And he was doing this too. And he gathered about 3,500 items. Unbelievable, amazing items. Glassware, old axes, different ceramics.
But he must have had an eye for the objects because, there's no point hoarding trash either. He had an eye for stuff that had a historical or present value.
Yeah, he absolutely did. And it was interesting, the objects that they're all listed on the National Museum have them, and there's some on display in Collins's Barrack. All the items are not on display, but certain elements.
Well, how did they come into possession of his artifacts, and should they not be? Could that not be a further jewel in the already rich crown of Buncrana?
Yeah, well, before he died, I think about 2,500 of them were given to the Royal Irish Academy. And then subsequently, another 1,000 were given by his wife to the Royal Irish Academy to deal with them, because he'd been a member of the Royal Irish Academy. So they give them to the National Museum, and they're under the curation of the National Museum. But his expressed intention was that they would be housed in Buncrana. And I think you ask a very pertinent question. Now, I know attempts have been done within Buncrana, and that there has been a group before trying to get them back into Buncrana. And I think it's something that should be seriously considered. And maybe with an election coming up and all that, would it be wonderful if that collection could be brought back into Buncrana some building there for all of us to see?
Renovate the mill. Can you imagine? I'm not sure if it's occupied or not. Can you imagine renovating the mill and housing the collection there?
Well, like some of the objects that were there, there was one of the objects was a Dutchman's box. It was a cigarette box. But the thing was, it was an alamac, or you could read from it. It was all mathematical. You could read from it. It was like a ruler. He who carries this box in his pocket will never need another alamac. So you'd be able to calculate the location of the ship and the speed of the ship. Now, this was about 1729. Beautiful wooden box. He also had this other item that I'm just picking up too.
Yeah, of course.
Leirigh and Chaillie, it was known as. It was a glass ceramic blue ball, half the size of a GAA football or a soccer football. And it's the witch's ball, it was called. And I don't know where he picked it up, but it would have been back to the time in England in the 1730s when fear of witches and all that was happening, that this ball would have been hung in your house to keep out witches and to keep out bad spells and curses. Now, how he came across this, I don't know. And this isn't on display as well. And if you type into the website, you'll see all the information about some of these items. Mm. And I thought that was very, very interesting, because here in Ireland, and a shot of McGrane's book, Cash and R, the as famous Irish book, he talks about, you know, children that have special needs or people that were being deformed kids. He put it down to the pishrog, the old custom of believing that when the child was born, when people would come to your house, someone would give the child a drop irk, a bad look. And then because of that, the child would grow up to be deformed, be it mentally or physically. And so when a child was born, the father had to make sure there was enough tobacco and whiskey in the house to make everybody happy that would come, in case you'd get the drop irk. And that was the same kind of cultural ideology that with the witch's ball, to protect the people from any evil. And again, like in the old hearths, the old fires in traditional cottages of Ireland, you never let the fire out. The fire was blessed. And if your fire went out, you never lit it again. You went to your neighbour and got a coal of theirs and came back and lit from their house, because, again, their fire was blessed. And when a child was being brought to be baptised from the house, they were leaving the fire that was blessed, that protected them from these evil spirits. So on the way to the church, these evil spirits might attack your child. So what they did was they put an evlog dacha, a burned cinder, into the baptismal robes and wrapped it around the child. And this protected them until they got to the church. Mm. A lot of these old things, he probably was aware of all that. So all those archives are at present in the care of the National Museum of Ireland.
I wonder if they ever visited this part of the world. But just two other things I want to talk about. He seems to have been a very, very interested and very proud in sort of the development of Buncrana, but also the wider county. And you know, he was one of perhaps the early adopters of tourism in that, you know, promoting the message of Donegal and what it has to offer. And you described a reading from one of his books, how he tried to sell Donegal to the visitor. So often we talk about people and they travel and they go away and they come back now and again, and we question how they were treated, as, you know, coming back as the big fellas now, if you know what I mean. But he seemed to have been far more grounded than a lot of the other people we talk of, and was very genuinely invested in Buncrana and the county as a whole.
Yes, and I mean, that's what's maybe wonderful about him. But look, that says more about Donegal, and in particular Buncrana, that he was able to make his home and find himself where he was. You know, there's a famous philosopher once said, a man can only think where he is born. You know, no matter where we roam or where we go, where we are formed shapes us. You know, the landscape, the colours, the sea, the all those different things, and then the communities we live in, the language we use, all that shapes us. And even if we leave, we still take that with us. It's in us. So we are shaped by the place where we are born. And what was beautiful about him is he lived where he was born, and he grew out of where he was born, and he appreciated it. Maybe that's the challenge for all of us, to realise how wonderful a place we do live in. Mm. And when he wrote his books was to express to the tourist and the people outside the county, look at what we have here. Look at how wonderful a culture, a language, traditions, etc., that we have here. And he did that absolutely brilliantly.
Anything in regards to his writing that you feel extra worthy of a mention?
Oh, there's lots and lots of stuff that I would do, but maybe just there was one lovely poem I thought was beautiful, and maybe we'll end with this.
No, well then, if you want to end with that, I have another question.
Oh, you have another question? Sorry,
because about Swan Park, and he gifted this to Buncrana. Yeah. It's only really only now, almost a century after, reaching its full potential. Is there anything? Do you have anything in your mind as to his motivation, or you know, how he described this gift, or what he wanted it to become? Or,
I don't know personally what his intention was, other than it was an altruistic one, to gift to the townspeople a space for themselves that would be theirs, rather than some buildings in it. Or it was somewhere that, again, this is back to the mental health and back to being able to enjoy a space to walk. And in fairness to the various politicians there in Inishowen, that was flooded And they weren't long getting it back together. Mm-hmm. Donegal County Council, I think they got a grant from the government at the time, if I recall correctly, about 1.7 million. Yep. I think Charity McConnell was involved in that. And I think Nicholas Cross might have been in the mayor at the time. So the, I don't know how they managed to succeed in securing so much money, but they got 1.7 million and restored that park.
Maybe
and
someone again, rubbed, maybe someone rubbed the witch's ball. Who's to say? Right, okay. So a caller says, by the way, just before we conclude with this reading, Harry Swan's books sell for over €100 each, apparently.
Yeah, that's correct. And yep. a lot more.
And a lot more, okay.
Again, I had the privilege of visiting his house, which now is in the ownership of Brian Flanagan, and he had all the books, and he scanned some of them into me and sent them to me that I didn't have.
Oh, wow.
But some of them have been reprinted. And they knew, and they're a lot cheaper than
of
that.
Course.
But the original books
the originals.
Are very, very expensive.
Another caller yeah. believes that the Republican tradition in Buncrana was mostly imported from Derry.
I take a fifth of that.
Right, okay. So we'll finish with a poem. As you say, there's an awful lot to, that you could choose from, but set this up for us, Joe.
Ah, well, look, at he seemed to have enjoyed people, in particular with the loss of his mother. He seemed to have a lovely relationship with his mum and with his wife and all. And he had a great relationship with other females as well. And one of the poems we find in his book is called The Girls of Donegal. And I can imagine the kind of character that he was in writing such. I have met what's called The Girls of Donegal. I have met with many bonny lass in Antrim and in Down. I've seen the Wicklow beauties and the swells of Dublin town. But still I never will forget the girls demure and tall, those blue-eyed girls, those dark-eyed girls, the girls of Donegal. I've met them in the market, I've seen them at the fair, those sweet and smiling callings that you'll seldom meet elsewhere. I'll never forget those happy nights when at a gilded ball I tipped the light fantastic toe with the girl from Donegal. And now 3,000 miles away, but soon I'll cease to roam. I'll wed my darling sweetheart and I'll settle back down at home. I met with Yankee beauties here whose charms are far from small, but none so fair as can compare with the girls from Donegal. Okay. So there we go.
It sounds like something Declan Ernie could sing, and that's in no way to a criticism of the words. Just stick a chorus in between that and you've got a fantastic yeah. song. All right, brilliant stuff. Thank you so much, as always, Dr. Joe Kelly, for helping many of us learn much more for the first time about Harry Percival Swan, a proud Buncrana man. Slán, Gormaha Guts. That is Dr. Joe Kelly there, and we were talking history. Always enjoy listening to that historian, Dr. Joe Kelly. He has a wealth of lost history. Indeed, I very much enjoy him coming on as well. Another listener thoroughly enjoying the history slot. Thanks, Joe, and thanks, Greg. It's our pleasure. A coffee morning is running in aid of the Donegal Hospice. It's being held in the new hall in Falkara, and it's on tomorrow, the 27th of September. It's from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. So if you want a nice cup of coffee, there'll probably be some treats there as well. And you want to support the Donegal Hospice, as most people do, get into Falkara, the new hall in Falkara, tomorrow between 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. I'm a landlord in Letterkenny, and the rights that are being given towards tenants is becoming ridiculous and will only get worse when certain parties get into power. Is it any wonder there are so many leaving the sector when our hands are tied behind our backs? I get that, and I sympathise that, and I reference the fact that, you know, sometimes saying you're a landlord now, it's something you would hide. Like, I know someone who says, don't tell them I'm a landlord. I can't remember what conversation it was, but it was something they were trying to hide because they were afraid that they were going to get criticism simply for being a landlord. But this call believes that the cards are stacked to the tenants and people are exiting the sector and seem to fear that Sinn Féin will be worse for landlords than what's currently there. Morning, Greg. Our politicians are housing migrants and Ukrainians for the big money, so all landlords are jumping on the bandwagon and we still vote them in. Thank you. Well, you also have to see what the opposition is proposing, because you have, you know, that's when, before you vote, if that's what's important to you, well, I would have a look at all the party's policies before you exercise your important vote. Greg, with regard to street lighting being paid for by the taxpayer, people are not aware that ordinary electrical contractors are prevented from tendering for the maintenance of this work, although They can tender for large buildings and hospitals, etc. Yet when it comes to changing a bulb in a streetlight, it has to be done by the ESB network. There is some interesting variances in the tendering, isn't there? Like, you know, regular electricians can't tender for this. And then there's other sort of strange elements of that whole tendering process. And sometimes there's no tendering at all. It's confidential shredding time again on Friday the 27th of September at the Letterkenny Shopping Centre. It's an association with United Shredding Company and the Letterkenny Rotary Club, and all for just a donation to the Donegal Down Syndrome Association. As usual, the USL units will be situated on the right-hand side of the car park near the entrance from 10:30 a.m. until midday. So just come along, and members of the Rotary Club will also be there on standby to assist if needed. Your continued support of this fantastic venture is very much appreciated. A bit of a random one. But if you want to get stuff shredded, confidential stuff, you want to get shot of it and no one else will ever have their hands on it, then get along to the Letterkenny Shopping Centre tomorrow. Read the grants received by the GEA clubs. A caller says, where she does not have an issue with GEA clubs receiving funding, there are lots of more pressing services that also need to be put in place. For example, speech therapists and physiotherapist services for special needs children and adults. And this is one of those things. It actually doesn't have to be either or. That we're told there's a ton of money there. There's 14.5 billion euro of Apple money. You know, it doesn't mean that you don't fund GEA clubs, but you fund speech therapists. If the will is there, you can do both. And the will is there, we're told, because some recruitment is ongoing. I would appreciate if Greg could put a question to the HSE. The Falkara area has been left without a school dentist. We cover this on the show. The dentist covers schools from Falkara to Dunloe. We know of a 9-year-old who's waiting 2 years for a filling. There's no capacity in the private sector, says the listener. And we got onto the HSE for response. We always commit to do so. It might take a couple of days, but we'll get an answer. The HSE Dental Services has traditionally operated as a targeted school-linked service whereby children in specific primary school classes are targeted for an oral health assessment and primary care treatment arising therefrom. Children are eligible for oral health care up to the evening of their 16th birthday. Ideally and historically, we would target 1st, 4th and 6th class, but with current resources, we're only in a position to target children in 6th class. Falkara Dental Clinic, like all Donegal Clinic, has a limited school dental service, with children in 6th class being prioritised for examination and treatment. This is crazy. Not crazy, it's only for 6th classes. All children up to the age of 16 years will be seen for dental emergencies and parental concerns. All children outside of 6th class attending the dental clinic for emergency dental care are advised that if any further dental care is required, that it must be accessed from other dental practitioners in the community. So effectively, this is not services provided by the school dentist. Due to a shortage of dentists nationally and reduced dental resources, the HSE dental services in Donegal have been impacted adversely on the ability of the service to deliver dental services for all grade age groups. But what this is saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, is we don't have the capacity to fill your 9-year-old's tooth. But if it needs to be pulled, we can get them an appointment. That to me seems counterintuitive. We should be protecting their teeth. Maybe I'm reading it wrong, but from what I can read here, there is no capacity for a 9-year-old to get a filling. But if you needed an emergency pull, you could be sorted. Make that make sense?